Welcome to Justice Takes Courage, a podcast hosted by Bishop Julius C. Trumbull, General Secretary of the General Board of Church and Society.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the General Board of Church and Society's Justice Takes Courage podcast. I'm your host, Bishop Julius Trumbull, the General Secretary of the General Board of Church and Society, the United Methodist Church. With the passage of the regionalization legislation at the 2020-2024 General Conference, the church's emphasis is increasingly shifting toward a model that not only allows greater autonomy for regional conferences, but also grants equal powers in decision-making across the global connection. Aligning with this growing movement in the church and maximizing agency resources, Church and Society and the Philippines Regional Conference Board of Church and Society have joined in a partnership called a co-programming agreement. Through this agreement, we will jointly promote contextual connectionalism for church and society's ministries in the Philippines. I'm excited joining us today, two leaders with the Philippines Board of Church and Society who uphold our social principles and engage in consistent peace and social justice work in the Philippines. Please welcome the Reverend Glofi Baluntong and Pastor Thad Colin Sampson. We are going to talk about the condition of human rights in the Philippines and the environmental protection violations, causes, and remedies. But before we get started, Reverend and Pastor, can you explain to our audience a little bit about your role in the Philippines and the passion for the United Methodist Church work in the area of church and society in the Philippines?
Yes, blessed day, everyone. This is Pastor Glofi. We are deeply grateful for this opportunity to share the work of the Board of Church and Society in the Philippines. I am currently the Executive Director of the Philippines Board of Church and Society. The perspective of faith is always directed toward what is the will of God. That's what I'm holding on, towards a full and abundant life. This is what drives me to work even more diligently in the work of social justice, which is the goal of church and society. So this drives me as an expression of my faith in expressing my faith to action, living action. Yes.
Hi, everyone. I am Pastor Thad Colin Sampson, and I currently serve as the chairperson of the Philippines Regional Conference Board of Church and Society. And my role is to lead and preside over the meetings of the board, composed of all the chairpersons of the annual conference Board of Church and Societies all over the Philippines, and also to help in carrying out the work, of course, with our beloved executive director, and also to live out in my personal life the principles of our UMC social principles. I think that is that encapsulates my role, and I'm very happy to be with us here today. Thank you
so very much. When we think about what are the struggles that people face in the Philippines as it relates to civil and human rights, and given the current government situation, maybe you can help explain that for some of our audience, and how the United Methodist social principles intertwine with your approach to help making a difference in the Philippines.
Well, I think the when we plan our programs and projects, and when we formulate our stand on issues, when we when we release our statements regarding human rights and all of the social issues, we always see to it that our approach have at least three bases. The scripture,
mm-hmm.
The facts that are gathered within the community, and the UMC social principles. So that is how we use it. We use it as how it is supposed to be used, a moral compass. But I think the one of the challenges that we face here in the Philippines, particularly as a church agency, it is the lack of awareness, even amongst our members and the clergy, even among the pastors and church workers, regarding the social principles, what it is and how we are supposed to carry out its purpose in the context of our of the local church ministries. So we try to propagate the UMC social principles and how to carry it out.
I think we share that in common with you here in the U.S. regional area as well, when we think about those that are not as familiar with it as they should be, the social principles. But I really like the starting with scripture, the facts, and then the social principles as a good basis for this ministry. Help us understand what might be some of the human rights problems and how the church engages in those problems or challenges in the Philippines. For those who haven't traveled to the Philippines or haven't studied or kept up, what would be some of the current human rights problems and challenges, and how church and society engages those?
At the moment, one very pressing problem in the Philippines is poverty. And this situation got worse, especially when the government inaction.
Mm-hmm.
In a situation where the resources are concentrated to few rich people, like the leadership, the government's leadership is seen as pro-rich people, yeah? Pro-foreign policy, pro-foreign, selfish and corrupt. But instead of the current government, instead of correcting it, it further intensifies the repression and human rights violation. When people express their grievances on what we're experiencing today as the war in Iran and against U.S., Israel against Iran, mm-hmm. prices really, like the price of diesel really shoot up, like what 100%?
Oh my goodness.
So this really affects especially the poor people at this time, and they are saying that it would the price of oil will come up more tomorrow. So the basic commodities are having high prices because of this, not to mention the previous issues of corruption that experienced by and that committed it is committed by politicians looking at political positions as business. That's bureaucrat capitalism. So because of this situation, people express their dissent. And when the government saw people going protesting, standing up and saying this is not right, this is bad, the corruption is bad, the government tends, instead of doing something about it, the government try to suppress people, try to, they even use like what we call the draconian law of anti-terror law, terror financing and suppression, prevention and suppression act. They use this to silence the masses in saying this, we are not, the government is not doing their part in alleviating suffering of its citizenry. So the threats, red tagging, fake charges are really bearing burden or really heavily burdened the people, especially the common masses. If the people will go to streets and protest, or even when you go to communities and teach human rights, and this is your right, like in my case, we go to communities of indigenous people, and we teach or we orient people on this is your rights, your right for ancestral domain and self-determination. The government government treat you as a threat to national security. So they red tagged you. They put you on surveillance. No, the progressive organizations were put into surveillance. That, and these people are continued denouncing the corruption and the wrong policies of the government. There were red tagging. There were arrests. According to the latest data of Human Rights Alliance, the Karapatan, there are 14 victims of enforced disappearances. These are human rights defenders. And 822 victims of arbitrary detention. There are a growing number of political prisoners reaching to 696. Mm-hmm. So, yes. Communities being bombed or the military bombing of rural communities are also intensifying. January 1, New Year, Mindoro Island experienced an intensified bombing because they said, the military said they are looking for New People's Army, but the truth is there are proposed development projects or projects like windmills, mining that would displace communities, and the people are standing against these projects because they will lose their lands. So to give way to these projects that are on as planned, they bomb the communities who are against the project. So that's one only of those human rights violations
of many human rights violations. When we think about scripture, I most recently had one of our bishops utilizing Psalm 24 that says that the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, and all that dwell therein. One of the major concerns of church and society is around creation care and the environmental justice. And so the government in the Philippines, correct me if I'm wrong, has been exposed for some environmental infrastructure corruption and some of the negative impacting of indigenous communities. When you think about environmental peace and justice work, how is this issue being addressed? And how important is creation care and the environmental impact of things to the work of church and society in the Philippines?
Bishop, the Philippines is a very, very a rich country in terms of natural resources.
Mm-hmm.
Being an archipelago along the Pacific Ring of Fire, our volcanoes and mountains have minerals that came from the depths of the earth.
Mm.
Our oceans also have rich biodiversity. So in as far as natural resources are concerned, we are rich. The problem is, even in its richness, it doesn't quench the thirst of the greedy.
My God.
Mm. Mining is rampant, especially open pit mining, that leaves toxic waste after flattening mountains. It also displaces our indigenous peoples. Now, in the ocean, reclamation projects also displaces people. It takes away the livelihood of not only fisher folks, but those who depend on the produce of the fisher folks. Often, there are tens of thousands of Filipinos that are deprived of livelihood. And also, it destroys our oceans. All of these, and it also worsens the flooding. All of these are done to favor the big businesses and also for export. So even if our country is rich in natural resources, its exploitation does not even favor the poor of our country. It favors other countries and also the big businesses, those who are already rich. And to top it all off, those who defend the environment are vilified, they are red-tagged, and they are harassed and killed. To answer the question, how do we address these giants? Let me just share to you what we are doing here in my province, in Bulacan. We founded the Bulacan Ecumenical Society for Transformation. So in these times, in these problems, we turn to our ecumenical partners so that we may amplify the voice even more. It is a collective of church people, clergy and lay, priests and pastors. Of the Roman Catholic Church, we have the Iglesia Filipina Independiente, we have the United Church of Christ in the Philippines, and ours. And the mission of this collective is to unite in helping the community in the spirit of ecumenism. The mission is for us to educate the people about the current situation. And then we organize these people, these communities, so that we can take concrete action based on what they think their need is. And to call on the government to stop these harmful projects, especially the reclamation projects, that worsens the situation of the already suffering people. So the church and society is part of the ecumenical, is being part of the ecumenical body that unites to address these problems. Bishop.
Yeah, there's no someone has said there's no real impact towards progress without collaboration with others who are committed to the work of justice.
And yes, we are.
We're encouraged by your example. I think all across the globe, people could learn from the example of not only ecumenism, but also the ability to galvanize around specific injustice work that that needs to happen. What's going on to repeal the repressive laws, especially anti-terror law, which is sometimes weaponized to suppress and intimidate and attack advocates of environmental protection and human rights? I think Pastor Glofi, I've heard both you and Pastor Thad say that, you know, people, clergy and others who are engaged in this work don't do this without some risk and some vulnerability. So can you let others know what's going on to address that and maybe repeal some of these repressive laws, particularly as it relates to environmental protection and human rights?
For example, there are still
ongoing petitions to repeal the anti-terror law and the terror financing suppression, prevention and suppression act. The civil society, including the church, submitted petitions to the courts for the repeal of the said anti-poor laws. So we go to courts. We also go in protest. We also attend protest rallies to expose the threats of this law. If we do not do that, or if the people will not do that, it would not be exposed the grave threats of this laws will not be known by the public. So street protests are being done, releasing of statements and even lobbying to Senate. We've been to Senate. We passed statements regarding two environmental defenders who were missing. We submit to the offices of the senators of the Philippines. So especially on the, it's the fifth year of the anti-terror law, there are massive campaigns on the effects of this law to the people. So these are part of what we do and how we move forward in repealing and in asking to repeal the government to repeal the law. And we one important thing is that we journey with the victims. Like, for example, Bishop, the issue or the cases of the victims of President Duterte's war on drugs. So we support, we give our support as a church to the victims, to the family of the victims of drug on war on drugs. So that's some things that we do here in the Philippines. We also include it in our worship, in worships, in studies, in youth groups, in Christmas institutes, for awareness. Yeah, Pastor Tad says that the education part and sharing what the effects of this laws and these destructive projects are very instrumental in amplifying the call for repeal of such anti-poor law that we are experiencing.
You've shared something that I think is very helpful and maybe universally applicable across the globe in the work of church and society. People have asked the question, what is the benefit of protests? But you said it is to expose injustice wherever it takes place. People say, what is the benefit of resolutions and statements and lobbying and advocating? It is to bring change, as you've described, not only to laws, but also to bring change to those who are in positions of power. So thank you for reminding us that while we must, as people of faith, be willing to protest to expose injustice. So that is extremely helpful. Are you willing to share, Reverend Glofi, Balamtong, about the intimidation and government charges for attempted murder that were recently dropped against you? Because the case had no merit. So as an activist, as you can encourage others who have to worry about government retribution, but yet still are committed to advocating for justice. Can you share a little bit about that, and what's your encouragement to others who would want to do the right thing and follow the will of God?
Yes. Well, as GBCS says, faith in action, seeking peace and pursuing justice. It is very clear that the role of the church is to live this out. Otherwise, well, we will become salt without flavor, fit only to be thrown away and trampled on. And if we fail to be Christ's representatives in the world, we will be useless. So my case literally crawled very slowly. For a case lacking of merit, it took 4 years, 4 months, and 20 days to be dismissed. I have to be removed from Mindoro for my safety. The church, the leadership of the church brought me here in Manila. So in my experience, service to those most in need, to those oppressed, well, the indigenous people in our province, to those whose dignity has been stolen, cannot be compromised. You cannot say, oh, I will not help you this time because somebody's looking for me or having me in surveillance. It is clear. I have this as my one of my life verse that in Matthew 25:40, truly I tell you, whatever you did for the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did it for me.
You're so, preaching now. Go ahead.
But I'll be honest, Bishop. I was afraid for my life.
My God.
That even as I was fulfilling my pastoral obligation, there were threats on myself, on my life. There were intelligence people who were asking for, they would ask someone I know and will produce my picture and will tell them, do you know this person? This is your pastor. You tell me where she is because she has a case. And the person that would call me, pastor, somebody's looking for you. So not only the pressure or the fear is not only for me, but for also for the people around me. So I was afraid not only for my life, but also for others. And even this is one sad thing. There were people even inside the church who wanted to let me be silent, no? So that people will, those who are charging you will stop. You should stay put. You will not go out to communities and serve. Just stay inside the compound of the church. Yeah. But again, it is clear to me that my love for God goes hand in hand with serving my fellow human being and those who are needed help most. And my experience and that of others. I mean, there are many people who are with the same dilemma as me, has shown that God's justice is not blind. It's ironic that the justice image here in the Philippines is a lady with a balancing the balance, the weights, and with the eyes closed But we know that God's justice is not blind, unlike the courts and the governments that are blind and oppressive. Yeah, the court, the judge, where my case is in, already knew that this is a trump-up charge. But still, they allowed the case to run for 4 years. So that's very, it's denying justice, really. Well, yeah. We continue advocating, but in spite of this all, we continue advocating and working for justice. My experience has shown that standing up for truth and justice alongside the broader community will not fail. No, rather, it will empower the people. It will hopefully empower the church to be more diligent and to intentionally do justice, social justice ministries in times like this in the Philippines, where people really need genuine love and services as they pursue their everyday life. So this one of my life verse is Micah 6:8, no? Do justice, love mercy while walking humbly with God. We cannot be in God's side. We will not be God's children if we do not do justice and be pursuers of peace. So I hope many people express their sentiments that God, it's indeed God's justice that prevailed. And of course, we acknowledge the solidarity of people believing and hoping for a full life, full and abundant, life.
That is a good segue, a good transition. You use the word solidarity because, and Micah 6:8, that scripture verse is on the ceiling of the Methodist building here in Washington, D.C. Do justice, love mercy, walk humbly with God. And it's a reminder of the work that we're committed to doing. But it's a good segue to the final question that I want both of you to respond to. And that's that I had an opportunity to travel to the Philippines last year, along with our board chair, Reverend Allison Mark, from the General Board of Church and Society here in the U.S. And we were hosted by you, the two of you, in a marvelous way. But we got a chance to talk up close, but also to sign a co-programming agreement, because we believe that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And we also believe that we can learn from each other, support each other, and collaborate. And you use the term solidarity as well. So I thank you both for joining us today. But I want to hear from Pastor Thad and Pastor Glofi, both of you, relative to the benefits of our co-programming agreement, as from your perspective. We think that working closer together, particularly in the new environment of regionalization, will allow us to provide support, even like doing this podcast today. So people will learn from this, and we will be inspired. Mm-hmm. But also, it is a reminder of our commitment to solidarity. So, how can you both speak to that?
Me first, Pastor Thad. You will be the closing. Yeah. I'm really grateful for this partnership, for being able to hear from you the programs that and how can we also share to you what we do here and work together on how to attain and how to reach the goal of social justice, peace and justice ministries in the whole connection. So it's not foreign. We will not be foreigners anymore, but partners in working together for a society where God's love, God's reign is really experienced in every aspect, of course, of the life of the church. So that's my take.
Thank you so much. Pastor Thad?
Yes, I'm also grateful because I have never felt this close to the Global Board of Church and Society since we have involved ourselves in the Ministry of Church and Society. Apart from the resources, of course the resources would be very helpful for us to be able to reach farther in terms of the ministries of the board, and also it will enable us to work and to minister in more concrete ways. But apart from the resources, we felt the spirit of connectionalism because of this co-programming agreement. Our programs would be more cohesive and responsive to the needs not only of the Filipino people but also the global context of justice and peace ministries. And let me just share my take on this, because this is what I appreciate about regionalization. Because of regionalization, we are united now more than ever. I think that is very evident because of this co-programming agreement. And I thank the Lord for that. Thank you.
That's powerful. I almost don't want to say anything else because that would be a good place to close. But I'm going to ask you to repeat something, Pastor Thad, that you said, because I think it would be helpful for pastors and leaders in local churches to understand how they can do things. There's a lot of people, and particularly during this current geopolitical reality in the world today, who are saying, I'm a person of faith. How do I respond? You began this broadcast when you mentioned three things: scripture, facts, and social principles. Can you repeat that? Is that how the work is done, and you encourage the work to be done through church and society in the Philippines?
Yes, I think so, because the work of the social the work of the church and society, and I don't think it's only the work of church and society, but everybody should.
The work of the church.
Yes, the work of the church should be based on the scripture, because that is our faith. The facts, because that is the reality that is happening in the world and in the communities that we serve, and we ought to reach out. And as witnesses of Christ, of course. And our moral compass as the United Methodists, our interpretation of scripture, our interpretation of our doctrine, is that these social principles are responsive to that call, because it goes with the long history and our tradition, and it is the best of our tradition. I think the soundness of the UMC social principles, the scrutiny that it has undergone before getting into the Book of Discipline is already a strong message to us that it is indeed a moral compass, and it encompasses the ministries not just in the U.S., in the Philippines, but all over the world.
Thank you so very much, and I want to say word of thank you on behalf of the General Board of Church and Society and all of our staff here in Washington, D.C. and in New York at the United Nations office. So we are so grateful to be in this co-programming agreement. We look forward to the ways in which we can support projects that are happening, but also collaborate on learning best practices and ways in which we can continue to pray for one another. I often say, where there's no prayer, there is no power. Where there's little prayer, there's little power. But where there is much prayer, there's much power. So we will continue to pray for you, and we give God thanks for the work that both of you do, but not just you, all of the people of the Philippines who are committed to the work of peace and justice. Thank you so very much. God
bless
you.
Thank you, Bishop.
Thank you for listening to Justice Takes Courage, a podcast hosted by Bishop Julius C. Trimble, General Secretary of the General Board of Church and Society.